Hello everybody and welcome to the latest edition of the Blacks Being Global podcast. I'm Eugene.
And I'm Lucy.
And yeah, guys, welcome to the latest edition of the show. How are you doing, Lucy?
I am okay. Had a very eventful week.
Indeed.
With everything going on and also, unfortunately, losing a loved one due to COVID-19.
Of course, yeah. So sorry to hear about that as well.
Yeah. So it's been a crazy week. So I'm trying to use this episode to lift up my mood and to, you know, just be in a better place. But besides that, I'm healthy, bills are paid, and my family are good. So.
Nice. And the weather's nice as well. So
and the weather's nice, but I can't wait for it to rain next week so more people can stay home. The people out here acting like the lockdown is over.
Yeah.
No, people, stay home. Yeah, stay alert, like Boris says.
I think there's a bit of confusion here anyway about that because the message has slightly changed. So it's not stay home, save the NHS. No, but I'm saying that the first one was stay home, save lives, save the NHS.
I don't remember all I know. I just remember the stay alert bit. And that's because it made me laugh because what the hell is stay alert?
Yeah, so I think now there's like confusion saying, yeah, what does that actually mean? But yeah, I don't know, man. Like you said, there's just so much going on in terms of like in the world in general, like right now. And it's just a really almost depressing time, but yeah, we don't want to dwell too much on that. But obviously it's hard not to, like, you can't ignore it basically. Which is like the frustrating thing. So on that, like what we're speaking about obviously is the tragic death of George Floyd in Minnesota earlier this week. He was like basically, killed in broad daylight by police officer. I say police officer, the more than one officer involved. Exactly. That's just literally, you know, brought to light again the, I guess, systemic like racism that, you know, plagues America and that has plagued America for centuries. And it's like, I guess the whole world now is like speaking up. But obviously, we're a tennis podcast, so you know we focus primarily on tennis players and like athletes and figures in the sport. I did tweet something earlier from Coco Gauff and Sasha Vickery, who were like I want to say the first like tennis players to like basically speak up on it. I know since then there have been many more.
Yeah, there's been Madison Keys, there's been Naomi Osaka, there's been Stevens, Serena posted something as well. Yeah. So there's been quite a few.
Literally as well, just before I got on to record this episode, I saw a post from Felix Soje Eliassim. He was talking about basically an experience or a story of his dad being stopped by police in Canada, which is where he lives. Felix, obviously he's 19 years old, he just felt the need to share the story because I suggest everyone goes and watches it for themselves because it's, like I said, it's just, I feel frustrated and almost it's upsetting that like, you know, black athletes, in our case black tennis players, like almost have to talk about this as well as, you know, why can't they just focus on, you know, their careers and then and the sport they play, their profession. But I guess, and I kind of said this to you like off air, Lucy, like I guess it's just like part and parcel of being black. Like there's so much we kind of have to like contend with like in this world, like, which it's unfair. And like, yeah, now I say now, it's something that people are, I guess, starting to recognize and like understand
a little bit. I think this is one of the, I mean, we've had so many protests, so many riots, so many, you know, speaking up hashtags, we've done it all. I don't think this one's a bit more different because I feel like people just had enough.
Yeah.
And I think that is why eventually, you know, the tennis players are talking a lot more, just so that people can have a lot more understanding of why we're frustrated, why we're angry. And just like, to me, it's just like, it's not the first time these things are happening. Exactly. These things have been happening for years, before we were born, before our parents were born, and we're still fighting for it. And at this moment, I just really hope by the time that I have my kids that, you know, this is not the same issue that they will be fighting about, because it's bloody ridiculous how the color of your skin is the reason why someone feels that they can kill you or, you know, discriminate you. Like, to me, it's just, it does not even make any sense. So
how do you feel about, like, there's been, especially on social media now, that's the kind of the world we live in. It's very hard to, like, avoid what's going on in terms of, like, you see literally everything on social media. How do you feel about, like, the way, I guess you can almost say, people are being, like, pressured or, you know, called out for, like, not speaking on the issue? Like, how do you feel about that?
To me, you know, I understand a lot of people who are saying that, you know, they shouldn't be called out and everything, which I agree. But I feel like it depends who you're saying it to.
Yeah.
So, for example, there's Jackie Aina, who's a Black African-American influencer, and she called out three brands who uses our culture for them to profit out of it, and said, hello, now our people are dying, so cough up, you know, some money. And what she did was brilliant, because two of the brands called her up, and now they're working on something on donating and whatnot. So, to me, I feel like if you're going to come and, you know, use our people, use our language, use everything from us, and then you're saying that you do not care about us dying, to me, like, it doesn't make sense. But I do feel like no one should be forced to be speaking, because I'm someone where I'm all about, it has to come from your heart.
Exactly.
So are you speaking up because you genuinely care about Black people dying, or are you speaking up because now you're out here, you know, people are on your mentions?
Like, I highly prefer if
you're exactly. I highly prefer if you're quiet, then you're just doing it for clout, because then it's like you generally do not care about what we're fighting about. So for those who are tweeting, you know, if you're not Black and you're tweeting, you know, Black Lives Matter, all of these type of stuff, make sure that you understand what we are fighting for and why we are angry and why we are, you know, protesting.
No, that's well said. Yeah, no, I completely agree. I do feel as well, like, it does feel like it's a different kind of energy, like, in terms of, like, the way people are getting behind, you know, the movement. Like, so for instance, Black Lives Matter, like, when that hashtag or when that organization first formed, it was seen as being, like, quite controversial. Like, there was, like,
and it still is. That's the craziest thing.
Because, I mean, people are now getting called out for, like, using the All Lives Matter hashtag, because obviously that's just because you're saying Black Lives Matter doesn't mean you don't value other races. Like, the whole point of that hashtag is to bring attention to, you know, Black life and the way it's, well, yeah, looked at in the world in terms of being, like, lesser than, basically. So I guess that's just me trying to look at, like, a positive. I quite like the, like I said, the energy that, like, seems to be building. And you kind of mentioned it as well, like, with brands, like, kind of posting as well. Like, even though it does seem maybe a little bit forced, or, like, yeah, slightly, yeah, I guess forced is the word, to be fair. But
yeah,
the fact that they're actually, like, bringing attention, you know, to the issue, I would like to think anyway that once, you know, we're kind of over, like, the protesting and things kind of quieten down a bit, we will start to see, like, proper, like, change, like, effective change, like, within these organizations as well. Because, like, obviously that's what I'm saying. I don't want to go too far off topic, but we can't we can't avoid talking about these things.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we are out here celebrating Black excellence.
Completely.
Yeah.
I think one last thing as well that I can't ignore. I don't know if you saw Sasha Bajin's tweet.
Oh,
I'm so sorry to bring it up, but I was stunned. I was absolutely stunned.
Do you know what was annoying? That was the first thing I saw when I woke up in the morning. So I was pissed the hell off. And the first thing, literally, I quote tweeted that tweet and I was like, you know what? Actually, I'm happy that Osaka fired you. Because I was, you know, I know a lot of people say a lot of things about him, that he's dodgy, that he's this and whatnot, and I get it. But I think it's because of her performance whilst they were together. That's the way that I wanted him back, not as a person. Because let's be honest, when they were together, you know, her performance were amazing. But now I couldn't care. I couldn't give two shits about him.
The thing is,
are you actually serious? Let's
just give a bit of background, because he since deleted the tweet. He's deleted the tweet. Yeah.
Look at him.
I didn't quote tweet it, so I don't have it to hand.
Oh, I attacked him. Because I don't know what you think this is.
Basically, what he said that was like so outrageous was that like he grew up in Europe and that racism like isn't a thing in Europe, which is like, huh? Like, I was completely blown away, because obviously we live in London, and like we know the situation in the UK.
And I really hate when people say this, because it's so damaging. And this is why Black Americans, or even Americans in general, think that we are out here, you know, not dealing with any type of discrimination. The racism here is even worse, because the thing is here is that you don't even, like, they hide it so much in the UK, for example, that sometimes you don't even know if someone's even being racist to you. Like, you actually have to sit down and think, like, raw, like, was it a racist thing, or am I overthinking it? So, to our American followers, please do not ever think that we are not out here being discriminated. We are on a daily.
Completely.
I have people literally, like, whether it was from my workplace, whether it was, you know, just going out, that, like, we've all been called certain type of names, whatever it is. Racism is very much alive. Even in Africa, some people have experienced racism.
Big time.
So please do not listen to anything that guy has said, or any other person that said that us people in Europe don't face racism. Literally in France, they were rioting because of the police brutality.
Exactly.
They have it all the time. Yeah. Do you get what I mean? It's just, I think, I was saying this to a friend not too long ago, is that I think another thing we need to keep in mind is that the media in America is wider
than
the media that we have. So we can easily hear about what is going on there. They can't easily hear about what we are doing here. Do you get what I mean?
Big time.
Like, I'm pretty sure they have no clue the fact that we are out here, Black people are angry about the TFL worker who got spat on and then died out of COVID.
Of course, yeah.
Do you get what I mean? So they don't know about that, for example. So, yeah, so we are dealing with racism, guys. Like, it's not a competition, it's not a thing, but please do not think that we're not being discriminated here on a daily, because we are.
No, that's well said. And I think just maybe to like wrap this segment up, I think it's important that Black people like around the world know that, yeah, like we're all in it together. Like, literally,
exactly.
Like, it's not a country thing, or, you know,
at all.
Yeah, like, depending on what, like, where in the world you are, like, as Black people, like, we feel each other's pain. Like, that's just basically part and parcel of being Black. Like, and I think that goes for most Black people, to be fair. I think they have that same like mentality. So yeah, like, I think, yeah, we could just basically keep praying and hoping that things improve. And I'd like to think that, yeah, we will get to a stage one day where, like, this won't be an issue, but I think it's important that people do speak up, but at the same time don't feel pressured to, because, yeah, not everybody is, you know, confident in voicing, you know, opinions, or, yeah, like, they just maybe don't have anything like intelligent to say, basically. So I think for those people, yeah, don't speak. It's probably best you don't speak. But for the ones that, you know, do feel the need to speak and have something to say that, like, could actually, like, you know, maybe change the situation, or, you know, affect some kind of change or have influence, please do continue to use your platform, because it's appreciated. Definitely. So,
and guys, please feel free to sign a petition to bring justice to George Floyd. We are going to include a link for you to sign a petition, and they actually got a lot of people signed right now.
Yeah.
We have 9 million, and it's about 8.8 right now. So guys, please sign. It won't take you even longer than a minute. And may George rest in peace.
Indeed, well said. So yeah, the next segment now is a little roundup. What's been going on in the tennis world? So yeah, like, as we literally. This will drop on the 1st of June, which is like crazy, thinking where's the year gone? Like, we're halfway through the year now, like, which is nuts. But obviously the world is still in lockdown for the most part. Although sport is slowly coming back now. Like, so I don't know if you've seen Lucy, football or professional football.
Which I do not understand why, but okay.
It's being played behind closed doors though, to be fair. So like, it's not like, you know, thousands of fans are going to be in the stadium and stuff.
It doesn't matter. What about the players? I'm talking about the players.
And on that as well, the players are being tested like literally daily. Like, well, not daily, but very, very frequently. So,
I don't know.
Like, things are in place to kind of make
I'm only saying, no, I'm happy that it's back because now we have less people just bored.
So exactly. Yeah.
But I'm just jealous because us tennis people, you know.
But you say that, so there's a lot of exhibitions that have been like popping up like recently, and like more been announced as well since like I said, lockdown being relaxed in like various countries now. So some of the ones or some of the exhibitions will feature the likes of Sloane Stephens, Madison Keys. I want to say that's an event in Charleston that they'll be playing in. Which would be behind closed doors, obviously no fans allowed.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, Madison Keys and Sloane Stephens will be playing in that, and also I want to say Bianca Andreescu and Sofia Kenin too. So like pretty like high profile players.
Surprised Bianca, she's in Canada.
I think traveling, or I think I'm not sure, is she in Canada though? Yeah, she probably is in Canada. But I think you can. I don't think there are like strict travel restrictions in terms of America.
No, the borders are closed between Canada and the US.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but I think maybe if you're a key worker, maybe she was able to finesse it.
I don't know, but yeah, I'm.
But you know, a lot of these countries are saying their borders are closed and people are still able to land.
Because this is the thing. Like, I don't know like how clear that is, but
yeah, I think it's a thing where if you're gonna go to the airport, make sure that you have a valid and good reason as to why you need to land in that country.
Maybe she's flying private, like she's a Grand Slam winner. So
true, you know, like Naomi Osaka said,
that stunt.
PJ to visit my mom, to surprise my mom on Mother's Day.
Yeah, that stunt.
And I was like, damn, I feel broke.
So yeah, like I said, that event's taking place. I don't have the date to hand, but I know that sometime in June. So that's something to look forward to in the women's side.
Yeah. And on top of that as well, there is also here in the UK a tournament that's going to be organized by the Murray brothers, yeah. Andy Murray and Jamie. Apparently it's actually organized to raise money for the NHS.
Oh, really?
Which I didn't know. Yeah, apparently, yeah. So it will include some players, Kyle, Dan, I think. I'm assuming Heather Watson might play.
Yeah, because on that, like the UK one, it's like a bit unclear because there haven't been like any official announcements.
There's an official announcement. There haven't been enough details about who's playing.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah.
All we know is that's going to be in Roehampton from the 23rd to 28th of June. Yeah. And they're hoping to raise £100,000 for the NHS, and it's going to be shown on Amazon Prime. So American people, you are going to be able to watch this. If you're desperate for some tennis, trust me, I'm pretty sure you will watch it. Because I feel like some of the exhibition we've not been able to watch. So yeah. I'm really glad that this is going to be easy to watch, not just for us, but for everyone as well that has Amazon Prime, of course.
That's a good point. And yeah, on the men's side, I think it's called the Ultimate Tennis Showdown. That's going to be taking place again in June. I want to say mid-June.
A lot of tennis during June.
This is what I'm saying. So like it's like reason to be like optimistic. Yay. And happy. Like I said, it's exhibition tennis, so it's like not going towards like any ATP points.
It doesn't matter.
Points or
even
anything.
If they just do one little serve, I'm just going to be like.
Just to hear the ball like being hit.
Just to hear the ball, just to hear it. I'm just going to be really happy.
But yeah, the Ultimate Tennis Showdown. And that's Patrick Mouratoglou's event.
Yes.
Yeah. And like, again, there's going to be some high profile players in that. So from our point of view.
I loved how he introduced Felix. Like, you see, he was very happy. And I was so is he going to join the team?
Really? You think it's that kind of...
Maybe, because the way it was going on, I don't know, I felt a lot of energy and enthusiasm.
Because I'm literally just on Felix's page, his Instagram page right now, and that, Patrick left a comment because Felix posted about it.
I'm telling you. I won't be mad. You know, I love Patrick. He has great players as well. Obviously, Serena. You have Tsitsipas as well. Coco. I mean, come on.
No, so that academy is incredible in terms of like the players. Incredible. Yeah, that kind of through.
He got a resume. So if Felix joins the team, I would not be mad. But we'll see anyways. Indeed. But when I saw his tweet, I was like,
But so that event, it kicks off on the 13th of June. So some of the players, just to like give you an idea who's going to be competing. So yeah, Felix, Ojeda Yassim, Dustin Brown as well, Benoit Paire, Goffin, Alexei Popperin, and who's the French guy? Lucas Poole. So, okay. So again, like a nice selection of players there, like very high standard. And that's going to be the Mouratoglou Academy again in June. So it's a nice tennis to look forward to there. Like I said, it's not ATP, WTA tennis, but it's,
but you know, it's still players, something. I just hope that the more that they do this, I also hope that it's a bit easier for players to gain access to watch them and stuff, which brings me, I feel like this is a good time to bring up this topic. So I know you guys might think that, again, Federer is my GOAT, but this time I'm saying something a bit more positive in a way. So he did actually say that he would prefer if we scrap all of the Grand Slams. And when I actually did more of my research,
as in for this year.
Yeah. And his thing is mainly, for those who, I don't know if you listen to previous episodes, I always said that I do feel like when it comes to the Grand Slam, we should just scrap it or even the entire tournament. But he'd said it in a way because of like, he likes the fans, just being there.
What
and
they
stuff.
Bring.
So if they're not there, it's not the same. So I definitely do agree with that. I had some players did agree with him as well. What did you think about that?
Yeah. I kind of understand it, I guess. Like, obviously, as a fan, like, it wasn't, like, the best thing to hear. But you got to think, well, you got to look at it from the player's perspective. Like, they pretty much missed out on the majority of the year. So it's like, what use is it, like, to kind of play, and this is what I'm saying, the French Open rescheduled, like, off their own back with no permission. So there's no guarantee that's going to take place. And like even the timing of that as well, like it's so close to the US Open. Mm-hmm. So like not only is it a different country, it's a different surface. Like the preparation is just going to be crazy. So
yeah.
I could completely understand like Federer's logic. And I think Nadal said something quite similar too. Like we might as well just, like basically call this year off. Like just, wrap it up basically.
Yeah, definitely. But we'll see how it goes.
I think, it's something, nothing's been announced, obviously, because the ATP and WTA, they're looking to come back, and the ITF, they're looking to come back on the 1st of August. So that's when they're saying that, tournaments will, like, kick off again.
I think for some reason, I feel like they really want to go through with the US Open.
Yeah, I agree. And I did read somewhere as well about the French Open, the, like, event, like director or like one of the organizers said that they're actually looking to have fans in the grounds. Like they're not looking to play the tournament behind closed doors. Like they actually want fans in there.
I won't be surprised because France are moving fast. I think from tomorrow they're actually going to have their restaurants open.
Really? Wow. Okay.
So they've lockdown has eased. I don't know if their deaths.
That's what I was gonna say. Like, do you know what the cases are like in terms?
I'm not sure. But I think if that was the case, maybe they would have not opened it. But
I guess that's reason to be hopeful then.
It's been open a little bit, so I think that's why it's giving them a bit of more confidence. But again, you never know, they might be one of the first to have a second wave because they opened a bit too early. So that's the thing about this thing, is that we can't really say anything now because it really depends on what's going to happen afterwards.
Exactly. And like just on that as well, and again, not to dwell too much on like corona, but I saw something today about South Korea, like schools being like shut
they
down
open.
Again.
Yeah.
But no,
yeah.
They've had to close,
yeah,
close
open,
it.
They have to close
yeah,
it. Yeah,
like because heard, there's been a spike, like, and it's just like this thing is just so unpredictable. Like it's just
really
it's irritating.
Is.
But yeah, we'll have to just carry on dealing with it the best way we can. So yeah. But we've got actually on the whole exhibition thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have an interview.
Yes, we do. So, guys, again, look at us securing interviews, coming with the content, because that's what we do around here. Indeed. So we have an interview with Rodney Rapson, who is the man behind the Exo Tennis, which was the first sport event in Europe during COVID. And of course, it's tennis because it's the best sport ever. So, yeah, this was a very great interview that Eugene did. So stay tuned and have a listen.
What I want to get into is the Exo Tennis event, which I believe is the first tennis tournament like in the coronavirus era. Is it fair to say that, you know, it was your idea basically?
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, we have a great team that helped put it together, but I'm not being bashful about saying that it was, you know, my idea at the start, because all the guys, all the boys, and the guys of the team said you got no chance pulling this together. And I work closely with Sport Radar, which is a data company which deals in data rights, etc.
Okay.
And the two guys there, David and Jack, you know, we brainstormed the idea, but you know, they gave me the platform to be able to pull it off in terms of how to fund it, etc. But the idea of getting the players and everything, that was originally my idea, and then as it got closer, then everybody came on board, and it's been a nice, let's say, we're into our fifth event here. We had four in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But we were, you know, a reporter told me that the reason why we got so much buzz was not because it was just the first tennis back. It was the first sport back in, you know, Western Europe yeah. and even in the States. And like, it was the first stuff back. Australia was picking it up. It was crazy coverage. We had Super Bowl numbers. Wow. In terms of coverage, I'll send you a link in a little bit that you can have a look at. It's quite funny.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
The reach, yeah.
Because your official title is the managing director for PlaySite. Yeah. So
for Europe and UK. Yeah.
So,
exactly.
So
yeah.
Can you tell us a bit about like what PlaySite, like what that is as well, like just briefly.
PlaySite are market leaders in the space of tennis in terms of video analysis. So it's a really cool analysis tool. We work with all the big academies and federations around the world in tennis, and they use our tool to capture video and do, you know, analysis with the players and for the coaches. That's where we first started, but we've now doing a lot of stuff with automatic production, which is, you know, having their camera at the back and streaming.
Yeah.
And not just for tennis, but, you know, numerous sports. Our camera technology can do a lot of stuff automatically. And that kind of fit into this environment because we needed to have a system that would work with that cameraman, because putting this event together was not just about, you know, having a tennis event. It was about having the least amount of people on court.
Of course, yeah.
So we had the umpire and the two players, and everything else was done autonomously, from the scoreboard integration to the camera feeds, everything. And so now what we're seeing is a huge influx of other tournaments coming up, and a lot of them are adopting or using the PlaySite technology to film it, because we're still in that sort of COVID-19 pandemic,
of course,
era, where everything needs to be, you know, least amount of hands on deck.
Because you kind of touched on it just now, but the first event got on the way, I'm going to say it's the 1st of May in Germany.
Yes. Yep.
Like,
yep.
How long was the planning process like leading up to that?
Yeah, it's a good question. So as soon as I had the idea, I called Dustin. So Dustin's a good friend of mine for a few years. And I called him up, and that was March, basically when the ATP made the announcement that they're stopping the tour.
Okay.
And they're going to not play any tournaments until, at that point, it was only till June was the ban.
Yeah.
Or the suspension. So I spoke to him, and, you know, all tennis players are self-employed. So that means for them, their income is shot for however long. I think it's going to go a little bit longer than they're saying. First of August.
That's the date. It's
going to push back again, probably, until 95% of the players can travel.
Yeah.
Freely without any restrictions, they can't have an ATP tour.
Of course, yeah.
So that we started planning literally on that day, and I started working closely with Dustin. And you know, Dustin is a huge part of this story, because he was the one that, you know, got all the stuff from, let's say, the player's perspective ticked off, and what would be needed in terms of, you know, approvals and checks and all this kind of stuff that you do want as a player in terms of taxes, et cetera, contracts. Yeah. Dustin played a big role, and he's, because of the way, I don't know if you know much about Dustin's story, but he's very much been, you know, he's had a rough coming up on his background.
Someone actually want to speak to actually in the future, maybe we can speak about that later on, but yeah.
He's a guy that knows everything on the tour because he has never relied on a manager or an agent to take care of his stuff.
Okay.
He's always taking it with him, his dad and his mom take the decisions.
Yeah.
Which, you know, on one side is tough for him because he has to manage things that other players don't, but on the other side, it makes him very clued on as to what it is that needs to happen. And but the good side of that is that once he signed on and said, okay, I'm playing,
yeah,
the amount of players that respect him and his decision-making, they all knew, okay, this is legit. And it made it even easier in terms of, like, you know, getting the guys in Atlanta, because it was easy getting it here because I'm living in Germany, but then we need to run an event in Atlanta with, you know, remotely. I need to speak to the players. And so for them, it was huge for them to say, okay, Dustin's in. Then I knew Donald would sign because they're good buddies, and Chris Eubanks and Pasha and all these guys, Taylor Towns and Sasha, they all love Dustin. So, you know, that was basically in. So he's the big catalyst for the players joining this little exo-tennis movement.
And I guess, yeah, you can kind of say he's the highest profile player in terms of when you look at, well, the German lineup. I know Yannick Hafman, he's ranked, like, I want to say 143.
Yeah, Yannick was, you know, in terms of ranking, and he was like 99 just recently. But in terms of profile, yeah, it was. I mean, Dustin's lower down in the rankings now, but he still brings that X factor when he's playing. Course, I mean, the first week he pulled out some ridiculous. They made his sports center in the States, one of his clips, you know, through the legs.
That trick shot, incredible, yeah.
And for him was, you know what, for Dustin, it turned out great. None of us could have predicted that we would get this media reach.
Okay.
And we were careful. We actually didn't want to let people know. We didn't want to get media out because we just wanted to host the event and get on with it, because we wanted to be behind closed doors and just about the players. But then it got leaked out and it became a media circus. So none of us could have predicted that we would have the success that it would have had. But for Dustin, it was great because, you know, for his sponsors and for his image, he hasn't had that much of reach since he beat Nadal in 2015 at Wimbledon.
Okay, yeah.
He was on the front page of every tennis and every, you know, anything that was written about tennis, Dustin's name was there. So it was good for him as well in the end.
So just more now on the tennis event itself. So player, like, prize money, is that something that was discussed as well, like, beforehand? And, like, what's the process like behind that as well?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Dustin was a big driver of that, how we structure this, because we wanted to make sure that the players get remunerated in a decent way, more than they would on a normal tour.
Okay.
And we were able to do that because we just, you know, by the time the income comes in at a tournament and goes out, the players take a very low percentage of the total income.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's like, it's if you think about Wimbledon, I've heard something crazy that at Wimbledon, players get 13% of the total income.
Yeah, the tax is ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're the biggest assets. That's the reason why people come to watch. Exactly. Because of them. But so in our events, and we weren't going to obviously go through individual earning each player, but the players took home around 75% of the prize pool the total income. So it means that, you know, for a player like Dustin playing three events and Yannick Hafman, and their local events, like, they didn't have to go very far to play them, and especially the lower ranked players, I mean, they made more money, or they're making more money during this period than they would have on the tour when you take into account all the travel expenses that normally have to go into place, etc., etc. So and that was an important part of the whole story, that we wanted to show that the industry, or that the way it's currently run, is a little bit broken and something needs to be addressed in the prize money pool. I think we found a good balance of how to do it, at least for our events.
The event initially started off in Germany, now it's in the USA, Atlanta, and that was I think the first event was in mid-May.
We started 13th of May could be.
Is there plans to, like, extend it and, like, maybe branch out even further, or is it just for the moment we're just staying in Germany and in the USA?
No, I mean, I'm not going to. We had a lot of requests to do more events and sell the rights and do all this kind of crazy stuff, but we're going to stick with the ones in Germany. There's a lot of stuff popping up now.
Yeah.
And, you know, I spoke to the team. I said, we can't top what we did in the first, you know, this first month of May. We ran, five events here in Germany because we're still going.
Yeah.
We extended the ones in Germany. We ran four in the States remotely. It's been a crazy month. Eventually the tours are going to resume. And we want to get back to our normal, let's say, day jobs.
Yeah.
Of, you know, looking after what play. You know, I'm not a tournament organizer. It's been great. And I think also we don't want to lose the quality and the message of what it was that we were trying to achieve, which is give a platform to players that don't normally have that platform.
Okay.
And, you know, tell a story about, you know, how we think tennis should be managed from a prize money perspective.
Yeah. So when will the last event be, like, as things stand?
Officially, we're running till middle of June. Okay. We probably will, like, in terms of a Germany one, will extend. At some point, we probably will run some more events in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Because it's just easy because we have the whole setup there.
Yeah.
But I don't know when that will be. It'll all depend on when the tour resumes or doesn't resume. I think there's also, I mean, one thing I'd love to do is I'd actually love to run Exo Tennis, where it's Germany versus Atlanta,
we'd
get the guys from the US playing against the guys from Germany in like a two event series. Yeah. That would be really nice. So there's different things in the works, but you know, you need to find sponsors and fund it. And it's a big job, but you know, ideally you never know. I think there's some opportunities there, but you know, this is not what we want to do long term, right? Because the tour is going to come back.
One of the main reasons I wanted to speak to you is just because, obviously, doing what we do, focusing on black tennis players, it's been kind of nice to see in the Atlanta event anyway, a lot of black tennis players. So you mentioned briefly already Taylor Townsend, Sasha Vickery.
Yeah, she's been on your show, right?
Sasha, yeah, exactly. We interviewed Sasha exactly a few weeks ago. Yeah, brilliant interview, actually. Cool. She is really, really sweet girl.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
and on the men's side, you've had Christopher Eubanks and Donald Young,
and Nathan Pasha.
I was going to say, these are the lesser known guys. So, like, well, yeah, Nathan Pasha's someone I've literally just been introduced to through Exo Tennis. And on the women's side, Lexi Pitt and Mackenzie White as well.
Yeah, exactly. So they came in the last minute. Yeah.
Are these like college players in the US?
Yeah, lower ranked players. And I think one of the big goals for me, look, you know, growing up, also, you know, I'm not white, right? Yeah. I think there's got to be a distinction between non-white players and white players.
Yeah.
And I think probably right now is getting highlighted in the media,
completely.
Right?
Yeah. You know, unfortunately,
but look, in sport and tennis, especially, it still remains a rich man's game, and it's very much without being too negative, it is a very rich white man sport.
Completely.
It's that way. It will be that way. It's not going to change. And I was thinking about it the day when you asked me to speak about it. And I would even go further, and I think, like, if you break down players' opportunity coming up, right? So you think of look at the majority of the black players that made it, okay?
Yeah.
So they may not have money, because already as a black player, you're going to struggle regardless, right? No matter even your economic status.
Completely.
Or how much your parents earn.
Yeah.
You're going to struggle for getting selected. Talent ID is not talent identification, it's talent selection.
Yeah.
Basically, it's looking at who's the best talent right now. So there's a lot of stuff that happens, you know, and there's obviously a lot of racial undertones. When I was growing up in Australia was really racist with stuff like that as well growing up. So, but if you think about the players that made it as black players, just have a look at where they're from. So all the major black players in the States, well, they come from America.
Yeah.
Right. So if you don't have money, you got to make sure that at least you come from a place where there's a platform for them to succeed, which is that federation has money, or has not even money, there's enough tennis going on that you can showcase your talents.
Yeah.
So, and then you look at Gael Monfils, Songa, French. Yeah. Even Dustin, he's obviously, you know, Jamaican, but he spent a lot of his time, especially when he came back from Jamaica, because he spent a lot of time in Jamaica when he was 11 till 17, 18 and came back to Germany. He knew he had to come back to Germany in terms of to be in this environment where there's good enough tennis to be played.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, until a player, let's say, comes, you know, from Africa where there's, where, you know, you think about the amount of talent that's out there. Until a player really comes from, you know, a Nigeria or someone like that, a black player, you got to say that there's two parts to it. One, you're going to struggle being a black player or ethnic minority of any sort, right, in any country.
Yeah.
The next part of that is, if you are going to try and succeed and you're in that sort of category or that bracket, you better be born in a country that's a Grand Slam nation,
yeah,
right? Or you better be born in an area where there's, you know, very good tennis and a platform for you to showcase your talents.
So yeah, again, thanks Rodney for your time. It's a really, really insightful chat that we had. And yeah, all the best with the EXO Tennis Series. It's been brilliant to have and like kind of, you know, see tennis again during this corona period. So yeah, thanks a lot for your time again. So Lucy, the next topic, eagerly anticipated.
I think this is the topic that I was just so excited to talk about.
Forbes, talking money. Moolah.
Yeah, money. Take it out of pocket.
So a lot is like kind of... In terms of Forbes anyway, like tennis has been at the forefront, like, which is just incredible to see.
All I'm saying is that the moment my child can crawl, I am getting a mini racket because there is bread to make in this sport. No. Y'all are sleeping. You guys are putting your kids in football and basketball. There's serious piece to make in tennis, guys. You're sleeping on it. So if you have a child right now and you're putting them in soccer, that you Americans say, football, basketball, you're wasting your time, bro.
It's such a good point. But and I don't want to like to seem like, oh, money, because tennis
is money, guys.
Tennis is such a, like, in terms of the sport itself, like it there's so much, like, there are so many benefits to playing tennis.
Mm-hmm.
Physical, like mental as well, although it does at times, it can be quite lonely because obviously you're out there on your own.
It's very, I feel like it's the only sports where you get different environments. So like with football is football pitch, tennis you get grass season, you get clay.
Good point. Yeah,
you get what I mean. Exactly. I feel like not a lot of sports have that. It's, even if they travel in a different city to play against each other, there's no difference.
Yeah, the conditions are pretty much the same in terms of playing on grass. Exactly. Completely. Yeah. That's a good point. So again, yeah. And that kind of plays into what I just said, like about the physicality of the sport. Like the tennis players have to adjust to, you know, the surfaces they play on, like week to week. Like,
yeah.
So. Yeah, like, so in terms of like the monetary kind of reward, I'm like, you know what, I'm all for them making millions. Like they deserve 100%. It like and more, if anything. Like, and it's like sport in general is, it's a different world if you're a professional athlete in terms of the 100%. Money you make, but at the same time, I don't think people necessarily like consider the hard work that kind of goes into like being a pro athlete in terms of like the physical training and like
especially stuff like tennis, where, you know, you hear so many tennis players saying, I bought a house and I'm barely ever in it because exactly. They have to travel,
yeah,
you know, like, yeah, just up and down.
Sasha Vickery said that is exactly in our last interview.
Exactly.
So yeah, like, so but on the whole topic of money, Naomi Osaka was named the highest paid female athlete of all time.
That
took in her earnings, for the year 2019. So and the thing is, Lucy, again, I felt very reluctant to like post about it because I think anything to do with money is it's personal. I don't care if you're a public figure or not. I think it's a...
I mean, you need to keep in mind that the only way you can be in Forbes is if they give you the
No,
deal.
True. I know that. But I'm saying, because I didn't really see... The only reason why I posted about it, and I was fairly late to post, but the reason why is because I wanted to basically make sure Asaka was like comfortable with it, if that makes sense.
And do you know what? I had a feeling she wouldn't tweet about it.
But this is the thing. So she hasn't explicitly tweeted about it.
No.
But she has liked like certain tweets referring to it.
She did not check.
Yeah. So I've, because that's what I'm saying. I when I saw that, I was like, you know what? Fair play. She's clearly like comfortable with the news kind of being out there like that.
I mean, come on. It's
nothing to be ashamed of, obviously.
It's a huge achievement at 22 years old.
It's mad.
As in no other female athlete has earned as much as you have at 22. You went even above, you know, someone that you looked up to. I am sorry,
because we're gonna come on to that. But yeah, just on Osaka still, like you said, 22 years old. Obviously, she's a two-time Grand Slam champion. But in terms of like the
back to back, which is kind of rare, guys. By the way,
true story.
Men and women.
True story. But yeah, so where the money comes in, like obviously she's an incredible tennis player, but she has apparently she's got 15 endorsement deals, as things stand. So literally, and apparently nearly all of them are worth like seven figures, which is just phenomenal. Like, so.
You know, when I read that bit, I was like, what? Because I thought she had like 5-6 endorsements. I didn't realize it was 15.
I know, it's nuts.
I was just like,
it's crazy.
Figures, and it's just like,
it's so mad. And like the thing is, when you look into, because the thing is, Forbes, they break it down like in such like great detail. So they show you like in terms of like, well, yeah, her earnings in terms of endorsements. And then her earnings in terms of like tournament wins, and like the there's like such a dwarf in comparison to like how much she's won in terms of, you know, actual winning tournaments compared to the endorsements. I want to say like in terms of her endorsements probably equal up to like, I want to say maybe at least 28 maybe 30 million, and then like
probably.
And then tournament wins it's like 3 million, which
probably,
is like just
because
like
that's the thing with tennis players, most of them, all of their money mainly come from endorsements,
exactly, and sponsorships,
stuff.
Exactly.
So like, you know, and it's basically, I mean, in total she literally earned like 37 million,
which is nuts. Yeah
is
dollars,
absolutely insane. And I hope this keeps people bloody quiet about how Osaka has been slacking and lacking. It's just like, you don't bag 37 million, that's all I'm saying.
Been too busy securing that bag. Too busy securing that bag.
Honestly, because I really had to watch people for like a year chat so much shit about this girl that was been minding her business. She doesn't have any issues. She's funny. She's calm. She's getting her bag. But that's why they're hating, because their fave is not carrying 37 millions like that.
So yeah, blessed and highly favored, and yeah, just great to see, man. And she really deserves it. And like, and another thing as well that's like kind of spoken about often with Osaka is her appeal in terms of like, you know, the way how she kind of appeals to various sectors of society, like being of Japanese, Haitian, Black heritage. Like it's a big thing, pretty much.
Definitely. And like, such a big background and stuff. I'm amazed and happy at the same time as a Black person that this is what is actually happening, because these type of things are normally achieved by white people because, you know, of, you know, the privilege that they have. So I'm so glad that it's a Black woman. I'm so glad as a tennis player that's able to achieve such thing at such a young age. And I really hope that people can and the best thing about it, new generation.
Indeed.
Because people need to understand that the older generation, like I said, they're getting old. They gotta go. So we need to focus on the new ones. And Osaka is literally on the line. And I've been saying it from the get go. She is going to be a legend in the making.
Yeah, no, big time. Well said. And like, even to kind of go back to how we opened the show, like, you know, Osaka's, she's literally taking part in protests like going on in America. Like that's where she lives. So she doesn't like shy away from like social issues as well, and it's something that
she's always been spoken about. For someone who doesn't speak that much, she's always been spoken about her heritage and, you know, like her background, both Japanese, both Asian, like even as an American as well. At the end of the day, she's still an American. She grew up there. So I'm really glad that she didn't get lost in the sauce. She didn't, you know, listen to the pressure, because it's very easy, especially at a young age, for you to, you know, listen to what everyone has to say about your background and where you're from. So I'm really proud that she's able to, you know, achieve that. And she's humble, which is the best thing about it as well. She doesn't even need to, and she doesn't do it because it's forced. Because I feel like a lot of athletes, they pay that humble thing, but deep down they're not. But you can see with Osaka, like,
it's genuine.
That is her. It's genuine. Mm. Like, she probably was just like, oh, okay, 37 minutes. Do you know what I mean?
No, definitely.
Or anything, but to her, it was like, I'm pretty sure she's still, like, you know, of course, that, like, wow, like, I really did that, like, you know, at such a young age and everything. So kudos to her and kudos to Serena
I want to come on to Serena in a minute, but just on overall, so the overall list of, like, highest paid athletes, Roger Federer came out on top, which is, like, again,
number one.
Yes, just showing
number,
like,
one. Just to show you guys, my goat is still number one. And just to let you guys remember as well, he was number 5 last year.
Yeah,
number one. I think it's because of one deal, actually, they ended up being number one.
And also, they're saying, like, Corona's also played a part in things as well. Like, yeah, like with footballers and taking pay cuts and stuff. Like, so it's just it's fascinating to see, but. Something we discussed.
And apparently that was the first. This is the first time we have a tennis player.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah. Which is, it's a good look.
Again, guys, there's bread in tennis. Stop putting and all of that. Come to tennis, especially if you're black. We need more of you, black.
That's my thing. Like, I want more black people to be aware that, like, there's so much money, like, in this sport.
And do you know what? That Forbes article really did help, because I actually did see a lot of tweets from Black Twitter talking about, that's it, I'm gonna be a tennis player.
To be fair, I didn't see actually. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. That's something that Osaka liked, one of those tweets.
Oh, really?
Referring to exactly that. Like, as soon as my son's born, like, he's getting a tennis racket.
You know, thankfully with social media, people are more aware and stuff. So I think, you never know, by the time we grow up, we're going to see, and I'm really, really hoping that we have more black people into the world of tennis.
No, like, big time. Big time. But yeah, so the top 100 list overall, I want to say there were... And this is male and female. I say male and female.
Men and female.
So there are basically 98 males or men athletes and 2 female athletes. And, you know, who were those 2 female athletes and what sport did they come from? Again. Tennis. So, obviously we've spoken about Naomi Osaka and Serena Williams. She was also in there. So Osaka was, I want to say, 29th. Let me just make sure. Yeah, so she was 29th in the list, and Serena was 33rd. So top 50, like, that's incredible. Like, and like I said, the only two.
When I saw that list, I literally scrolled down up and down twice to check. Like, wow, there's only 2 women, which it gave me a mix of feelings.
Yeah,
the side of me was like, this is amazing. A side of me was like, this is effed up. How is only 2 women in, you know, top 100? But at the same time, it was like, the 2 women are black.
Exactly.
And it's tennis, and it's all. And I'm really hoping next year there's going to be, you know, more of that, and the years after that. But
no, big time. But I think just on that as well, like, we kind of spoke about it, like, off air, but with Serena now, like, it just shows she's very savvy, like, in terms of, like, just her investments and, like, where she kind of puts all of her money. And, like, again, that's not something that's, like, kind of spoken about and celebrated enough, I think. And she kind of did allude to that in the interview that she did with the chat she had with Naomi Campbell and Venus on YouTube. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do.
But, like, she was.
But I think it's a thing where she actually did. She started when she started. She kept it on the low.
Yeah, true.
She did keep it on the low and stuff, and now it's being more spoken about and everything. And majority of the investment that she's made are, you know, either black or mothers or women so on. And only just a little few or like, you know, others that are probably white owned or
big company. Because it's funny, like, so we all know like how much of a like huge influence Serena is or was on Naomi Osaka, and it's like it's great to see that literally they're the only two.
I think that's why I was like so happy as well. It's like, wow, like, you know, anyone that knows Osaka knows, like, you know, huge fan of her. Even when she plays, you can see that like Serena's completely influence and stuff. So it's, I think that's another reason why I feel like it was probably such a great feeling for her to see that. It's like, wow, like, I literally used to look up to this woman and now I'm at a table with her.
Literally, like, she surpassed her. Like, yeah, she surpassed her. Like, but the thing is, like you said, it's because she's followed the blueprint, as in the Serena Williams and Venus as well. Like, they kind of set that blueprint of like tennis players 100%. Not just focusing on tennis.
Tennis players, not for only black tennis players. Yeah. Tennis
facts.
Love to just point out them for black tennis players, for all
facts, players. Absolute facts. So, no, man, it's just great. Like
the tennis media didn't speak enough about this.
As in the Forbes thing?
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Mm.
Yeah, you know, you make a good point.
It's a bit quiet.
I did see something on the ATP site regarding, well, in reference to Federer obviously being number one, but I didn't see anything on the WTA site. So I maybe they have like posted something and I've missed it, but yeah.
Listen, it is the 31st of May. We're going to be in June, and this is like the biggest tennis news ever, and you're not speaking about it. Believe.
But that's kind of
but best believe, I promise you, if this was a white player, it would have been top hot news, trending everywhere, and that's how I feel, especially if it was an ATP player as well. That's the thing, a black woman player. Mm.
So you think there's a bit of like sexism at play as well then, or gender bias?
No, I'm just saying that if it was more of like, for example, I saw more news about Federer's than Osaka's.
Okay.
So that's what I'm saying. So I feel like not only she's black and she's also a woman.
Yeah.
I feel like that's why it's not really spoken about in sports, because this is a huge deal. She's 22. We've never had this before. You know, it's tennis. And, you know, these are the same tennis people who complain about tennis is not out there. You use this. That's how I'm using it. Now my friends are interested in tennis.
I told
them there's
point.
Money to be made.
It's a good point.
Like, yeah, I'm going to put my kids into tennis. I'm like, yes.
No, it's such a good point. And again, that's why, like, I created this platform, Lucy, like, which is why you already know, like, I'm just trying to spread awareness that, yeah, there are other sports out there than, you know, it's not just football, soccer, or basketball, NFL, or like, tennis is a sport that, you know, we should be looking at and putting our kids in, like, and encouraging more people to pick or play. And
exactly,
I do want to see the numbers increase, like, obviously,
or if you're not even interested in playing, you know, there's a lot of things in tennis that you can do behind the scenes.
Big time.
Just, you know, the more we have of us, the more we'll be, and remember, we are culture. We make things popular. So if a lot of us pop off, trust me, there's going to be a time where 10 people are even going to be tired of us. They're going to be like, oh.
I tweeted something a few weeks ago now. Not to go too off topic, but just on the culture thing. So Felix being Canadian, I think he's going to win a Grand Slam very soon. Like, I don't want to put pressure on it, like, but it's going to happen soon. And
I believe that too.
I think as soon as that happens, obviously being Canadian, you're going to have someone like Drake like reference him in a rap, and then it would be over. Like, tennis would be like, it would just take
because
off on a different level.
I think he did give a shout out to Bianca on the IG when she won her slam.
I think he did. I'm saying in a song, like, I want to hear like a reference,
course,
like,
yes.
That would be so hard. Like, and I'm waiting for that time, and I think it's gonna happen.
It has to happen.
I'm speaking into existence. Like,
it's not every day just a Williams. Sometimes.
Obviously,
let's give us something.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm big on getting the new generation in.
Exactly.
I think it's because I just want to accept the fact that these people are going to retire. But I know the day that's going to happen, I'm going to cry throughout the entire episode. You might have to do the episode by yourself.
A solo episode. Damn. No, don't. But no, that's not happening anytime soon. So, yeah. But again, massive shout out to Naomi Osaka. and Serena Williams, and obviously Roger, your goat, not my goat, your goat.
Oh, your goat.
This I've got nothing against him, but he's not my goat. Anyway,
he's my goat.
So yeah, that wraps up this latest edition, guys.
I think this is my favorite episode.
It's been eventful. Like
I think it has been the most eventful tennis week that we've had since this lockdown.
Yeah. Started off a bit emotionally, like obviously what's going on in the world, like we can't avoid that. But
yeah,
it's been nice to kind of finish on a bit of a high. So yeah. Thanks for listening, guys. And again, massive shout out to Rodney Rapson as well for the interview. Great to talk to him and just get that insight, which is incredible. So big shout out to Rodney for that.
Yeah, and don't forget to sign a petition, and also don't forget to get your kids into tennis, guys.
Indeed. Indeed. Cheers for listening, guys. Take care and stay safe.